You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
I'm Strobe Talbot, and it is my great honor to work for the scholars of the Brookings Institution in my capacity as the president of the institution. And as some of you in the room know, Brookings is a very eclectic organization that's been around for almost 100 years. It's global in its scope, but those of us who work here are allowed to have our own particular passions. And one of my passions, in fact, right near the top of the list, is India. And so I particularly appreciate the chance to participate, at least in the beginning of this very important program. And I'm going to issue an apology in that regard. We had, as some of you may know, a complete weather disaster, Snowmageddon, earlier this week that, of course, gave the United States Congress another excuse to do something that it seems to like to do, which is shut down the federal government. And when the federal government shuts down, we Brookings have to shut down, and as a result, it has completely fouled up the week, and I have some sloshed over, if I can put it that way, administrative responsibilities that are going to require me to sneak out at some point in the course of the program when my iPhone buzzes or it vibrates. Please all turn off your iPhones, unless you want to tweet the event, of course, in which case keep them on. So I apologize for that. I'll be auditing the proceedings from the back of the room. I would like also to thank our co-sponsors, the U.S.-India Business Council and, of course, CII, which is a set of initials that is dear to my heart. I've been getting help from CII for many, many years and certainly in all of our India activities as we have proceeded to develop our program here at Brookings over the last dozen years, including now having a organic part of the Brookings Institution in New Delhi with an all-India portfolio in the form of Brookings India. We're going to be discussing today what, when I was thinking about it this morning, I decided to call one of the major events of the calendar for the new year. But Ron Summers, who was going to moderate the discussion today, outdid me considerably about 3 minutes ago in the other room. He called it the most exciting thing in the history of the world. He's nodding, so he's not going to deny that he said that, and he can elaborate on the point. But what we're talking about here, of course, are the national elections in India early next year. Now, there's a phrase that has become something of a cliche, and that is to call India the world's largest democracy. But there is an interesting feature of cliches. They get to be cliches because they're true. And there's no better example of that than the process whereby the people of India elect their own leadership. Now, India, as we all know, is the second most populous country in the world. And by the way, it's on a trajectory to surpass China in that regard. Unlike China, Indians elect their leaders. Voter turnout, according to the statistics that I have, are more than 700 million. Our speaker and guest of honor says it's going to be closer to 800 million. But he'll elaborate on that. That is larger than the United States turnout and the entire turnout of the European Union combined. Now, making it possible for those somewhere between 700 million and 800 million eligible voters to cast their ballots requires 800,000 some polling stations. The process takes place in multiple phases over a period of weeks. In short, there's a very big difference between the Indian system and our own here in the United States, where we Americans go to the polls in the mornings, and we know before we go to bed at night who has won. Overseeing this process is our guest of honor today, Mr. Samput. He is the head of the Election Commission, and he is one busy guy. Earlier this month, he oversaw elections in five states of India. He's been a member of the commission for nearly 5 years, since 2009, which was the year of the last national election. He's also served as a senior administrative service officer in several key roles, including Secretary of the Ministry of Power and Director General of the National Institution of Rural Development. So he is not only a master of the process that brings Indian leaders to office, he also has a firsthand understanding of what they do when they get there. So please join me in welcoming him to Brookings, and we will all benefit greatly from the discussion and the PowerPoint that we have ahead of us. So welcome to the podium, and we look forward to listening to you, Mr. Samput.
Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished invitees for today's program, gives me great pleasure to share some of the features of election management in Indian elections with the distinguished gathering gathered here. In fact, I should apologize to you for forcing you to come so close to the Christmas. Usually, I am told nothing can draw out people in such close proximity to Christmas in USA or in Europe. But when I got the invitation from you, there was no way I could have come earlier, till almost perhaps one of the last things I did before boarding the flight was to sign the due constitution paper of Mizoram State Assembly elections. After the elections are held, after every election, the list of candidates declared elected will have to be signed by the Election Commission and forwarded to the governor of the state. Based on this, governor will constitute the legislature for the state. Similar thing we have to do after parliament election is also over. Based on our due constitution, you know, proceedings, governor or the president, as the case may be, he not only constitutes the house, he also invites the leader of the party, which has secured majority of seats in the house for forming the government. So only with that, our role as election commission gets over in that phase of election. So because of that, I had to indicate, actually, ideally, I should have had it on Monday. Monday, I thought, would be further close to the Christmas. So the earliest I could make is this. And I am really very happy, in spite of such delayed coming on my part, I could find such good and enthusiastic response by way of significant participation. Now, I will take a little while to talk to you about the features of election management in our elections. Just to give you an idea, actually, a teaser of that has already been given. How big is our electorate? Entire Europe is, you can see, 449. Entire Africa, 54 countries, 566 million. So North America, all countries put together, 324 million is electorate, not population. South America, 235. And North and South America, 560. And entire Commonwealth, minus India, population is 900. Roughly about, 60% of this would be the electorate. As against this, we hold elections for an electorate of, as of today, that is, before the revision of the rolls we are doing for the current year, this is the strength of the electorate, 780 million. Right now, an exercise for enrollment of those who have reached 18 years as of January 1st, 2014. In anticipation, they will be enrolled in the rolls. With that, we expect the strength of the electorate to cross 900 million in India. And virtually the parliamentary election, which is due in the first half of 2014, would have this number as the electorate. This is to give an idea of the last parliamentary election, which was held in 2009. 714 million voters, almost 834,000 polling stations. We expect the number of polling stations for the forthcoming election to be 900,000. India does electronic voting. Number of electronic voting machines employed would be 1.18 million. Number of personnel who will be actually engaged in the task of election would be 11 million, both civilian and security personnel put together. Number of recognized, again in India, we have two categories of political parties. National parties, based on some criteria, they are recognized as national parties, and those which are recognized only for the purpose of the state elections. At the time of last election, it was 7 recognized national parties. Now it has become 6 because one of the parties fell short in certain parameters that got derecognized. It is 6 now. 44 are state recognized parties. Total number of registered parties last time. Again, we are very liberal with regard to registration of parties. So registration is different from recognition. Recognition comes after they participate in election and meet certain minimum requirements. This is registration. It was 1,035 at the time of last election. Now it has crossed 1,300. And the contesting candidates in last parliament election was 8,070. These are the constitutional provisions which went into before election commission and our electoral exercise was taken up for the country. One of the main reasons for creating an autonomous election commission was to take care of the preparation of an error-free electoral roll. The founding fathers of the Constitution attached greatest importance to the registration of voters. perhaps those of you who might have an idea of the pluralistic society in India, the kind of conflict which preceded before the country became independent and became a republic. So their main concern was to see that every adult Indian should have an opportunity of participating in the electoral process. In fact, the Indian Election Commission was created a day prior to the Republic of India came into existence. 26th January 1950 is the date when the country became a republic. Whereas one day before that, 25th January 1950 is the creation and induction of Election Commission of India. They sought to give a message to the nation about the importance of Election Commission of India by this. Some of the constitutional provisions. There is one Article 324 in the Constitution, which is the almost omnibus provision in the Constitution, which gives every conceivable, even inconceivable powers to Election Commission in the conduct of the elections. So very recently, in one of the state elections, we found after the date for final publication of elector list, one of the candidates who was contesting the election in Delhi, on that last day, his name was there in the roll. And by the time he filed his nomination, it came up for scrutiny, it was found that his name was missing. And in a situation like that, and it's another story, we order an inquiry, we go into it, how it has happened, etc. But on the day of the scrutiny, if a person is not a voter, he loses his right to contest, his candidature can be disqualified. It is under Article 324, we gave a direction that his name shall be restored after we have checked up and ensured that he was a validly registered voter. Like this, there are so many occasions where the powers of the commission were put to test, sought to be invoked for the purpose of election management. Another thing which is a unique feature in our setup is Election Commission can requisition the services of employees of both provincial government and the central government for the purpose of conduct of elections. It is there in the Constitution itself. When we require, it is the responsibility of the state government as well as central government to make available the requisite number services of those people. In fact, India is one of the unique countries where entire election is conducted with the help of civil servants. Regarding the Election Commission of India, in fact, till 1993, it was a one-member commission with only chief election commissioner. In 1993, by legislation, two more commissioners were inducted. In fact, number of commissioners can be varied from time to time by statute. And in order to give autonomy in functioning, Chief Election Commissioner enjoys the same status as that of a judge of the Supreme Court. That is the removal procedure. Once a person is appointed as Chief Election Commissioner, executive of the day cannot remove him. If at all removal, It has to be by passing a resolution in Parliament with two-thirds of the members sitting and voting. And similarly, the other election commissioners are given the protection that, except on the recommendation of Chief Election Commissioner, they cannot be removed. And again, in India, the only authority which has a say in fixation of date for the conduct of the election is Election Commission, whether it is state elections or national election. Of course, we are given a window of 6 months before the date when the life of present house expires. It is for the commission, taking into various factors, decide when the date on which poll shall be taken. This is just to mention about a judicial support which was given to Election Commission of India by the highest court in the country, Supreme Court of India, when a situation does not have a solution in the law or in the rules or in the procedures. Election Commission is not just to sit with his hands folded looking for some divine intervention. They have to act, do whatever is required to see that the election is conducted. From our experience, we can say there are any number of occasions where, but for this kind of an empowerment under Article 324, supported by judicial pronouncements, we would have found it very difficult to go through with the election process. This is just to mention the sources of strength for Election Commission: Constitution, legislation by Parliament. There are two enactments: Representation of the People's Act 1950 and Representation of the People's Act 1951. The 1950 Act, as I have mentioned to you earlier, entirely deals with registration of voters. One complete enactment dealing only with registration of voters. Next one is about various provisions relating to conduct of the election. Subordinate legislation, rules made by the government from time to time, judicial pronouncements. More than the law, it is the judiciary in India, whether it is the high courts in the state or Supreme Court at national level, they have invariably come to the support of the Election Commission. In fact, there is both a written and unwritten law in the country that once election process is set in motion with the announcement of election by the Election Commission, until the declaration of results, no court can interfere with election process. It is only the Election Commission competent to decide on various activities during the course of election management. The only time when court's role comes into play is after the declaration of results. Election petition by the candidate or by the voter challenging an election can be filed before the High Court of the state within some time limit. Only then the jurisdiction of courts comes. One of the instruments which helps Election Commission during the conduct of election is Model Code of Conduct. This was in its initial form started in 1960. Basically, this was to regulate, because people, particularly authorities in charge of election management, were finding it difficult about meetings by political parties, candidates, rallies, the kind of speeches they were making, the kind of acrimony that was generated, and misuse of power by the party in power. Like at the time of election, we have a government in every state, government in center, and naturally in certain situations, party in power tries to use their position in their favor to give advantage, to give electoral advantage to their candidates. Keeping all this in mind, Model Code of Conduct was evolved first in southernmost state of the country, Kerala. From then on, it underwent so many iterations and refinements. Sometime from the 90s, it is universally applicable. Even the biggest political leader in the country, whether he is the Prime Minister or the President of the ruling party or the President of the main opposition party or the Prime Minister, you know, designate of the main opposition, but whoever it may be, once there is a complaint that they have spoken something or done something in deviation of Model Code of Conduct, Election Commission gives notice to such a person, you know, giving very short time, like 24 hours or 36 hours, 48 hours to give his explanation. We pass orders. But under this, this doesn't have the force of law. We cannot disqualify a candidate under Model Code action. But it acts more as a moral code. Once we reprimand a person, the way that is highlighted by the media, once we censure a person, or once we caution him not to repeat something, when he does it next time, even in the same meeting, people will ask, you have already been told by the commission not to do it, and why are you doing it? Things like that. That is the kind of force of moral this has. Though there are, you know, different opinions on this, whether it should continue to be only like this. Some people calling it is a toothless power. You cannot disqualify a person. You cannot send a person to jail. What is the use of it? But then we have always held, during the election process, we are not interested in sending somebody to jail. What we are interested in is he behaves. He adheres to the prescriptions during Model Code period. These are, and again, as I mentioned, while Model Code does not have the power to convict a person or to enforce any, you know, devastating, you know, punishment on the violator, there are so many other provisions in law. Whatever action we take in Model Code is in addition to all these, you know, provisions under which action can be taken. First information reports can be filed, criminal cases can be filed, further action can be taken on the violator under normal laws of the land. And these are some of the measures we have to check and ensure correctness. Like, you know, the electoral roll is the soul in the conduct of the elections. So we ensure, we make every effort to ensure every eligible person name is included in the roll. This is unlike the practice in USA, where even a citizen, if he wants to vote, he has to register for voting. Whereas in India, if a person is enrolled in the roll, roll is a permanent one. As long as his name is not removed by following a due process, he will continue to be on the roll. He is entitled to vote in the polling station where he is registered as a voter. Similarly, nomination. The process dealing with nomination is a very transparent one. Nomination, which is followed by scrutiny. It is almost public scrutiny from the last day for filing of nomination to the date of the scrutiny, which is some 2 days. All his details are put on the notice board. They are put on the website. If a person has concealed his criminal background, if he has concealed certain relevant information about himself, which he is bound under law to disclose, anyone can bring it to notice. There can be a ground for disqualification of nomination. And under the orders of the Supreme Court, which was made into a law subsequently, like know your customer, know your candidate. Every candidate is required to disclose by affidavits. Affidavits, as you all know, is a legal sworn statement by a person. For filing a false affidavit, he can be prosecuted in a court of law. He can be sent to jail also. He has to give all prescribed details about his educational background, his financial background, his criminal background. Criminality among politicians is one of the burning issues in India. All details are put in public domain. We have ensured with the advent of the electronics, all these are put on the website. There are a number of civil society organizations. They download them. They try to make their own analysis. They try to tell the people how much was the wealth of a particular person during last election. From last election to this election, how much is their wealth? How could anybody have reasonably amassed so much of wealth during this 5-year period? Like that, all these things will come in the public domain for the information of the voters. To continue the same thing, these are all some of the measures which we have taken to ensure that all those requirements for ensuring correctness of election, they are done. And one of the things is observers. In India, as you know, there are 35 states and union territories. Each state has got its own senior officers and civil servants. Most of these elections, though conducted by Election Commission, they are all held at state level. So we depute officers, like senior officers, in the rank of permanent secretaries to government in other smaller countries. They will be sent as observers. For example, from the southern state of Kerala, somebody will go as an observer to Punjab. He is almost like a foreign observer as far as that state is concerned. So like this, we send people from different parts of the country to go as emissaries of Election Commission to observe. Actually, this is one of the reasons why we don't take usual foreign observers to observe our elections. We send the people from one state to another. Security. Security continues to be relevant even today. Security at the polling station, maintenance of general law and order during the poll. Even today, when we visit the states on the eve of conduct of the elections, people will be complaining that certain sections of the people are intimidated. They are not allowed to come to the polling station to exercise their franchise, etc. We have developed a mechanism called vulnerability mapping. People who live in such locations, they are called vulnerable locations. We take special care at the time of enrollment to see that their names are enrolled properly, that they continue to be intact. On the date of the election, our security personnel, we have people like sector magistrates and mobile parties. They will be visiting those locations, checking up with them personally whether they anticipate any problems in going and casting their vote, give them all assistance like this. This is all part of election management. I had mentioned to you about electronic voting. The country is fully covered by electronic voting system. Our electronic voting machines are the simplest possible devices. They are standalone measures. They are standalone instruments. They are direct recording machines. First, they were introduced sometime in 1982 in a very small scale. And almost from the year 1999, they have been used in a number of state elections. For the first time, these were issued in 2004 parliamentary elections. After 2004, they are used in every state, every national election. 2009 we have used. Now we will be using them in 2014 election also. So in between, there are some activists in our countries also who were carrying on a campaign that lighting of a lamp, burning of some bulb against some candidate may not be good enough evidence that vote has been registered in favor of that candidate. These were some of the doubts which were raised by people from time to time, went into litigation also, and political parties were also requesting the election commission, why not provide something more to build confidence than what is seen in direct recording machines. In response to those, over a period of 2 years, we have evolved voter verifiable paper audit trail, which is a printer which is attached to the machine, and when the voter casts his vote, in addition to electronic display, there will also be a paper display. But in our country, actually the original demand was voter should be given a receipt as to whom he has voted. That can be misused. Political parties can intimidate, candidates can intimidate, or it may lead to other, inducement, possibilities. Keeping those things in mind, we have devised the printer in such a manner it will be behind a case, transparent case. Voter can only see the paper, which will be exhibited for about 8 seconds. After that, it gets cut, falls into a box where it gets collected, and there are some rules when it can be counted. These are provided in the rules. Naturally, when there is an election petition, the competent court will ask this to be done. And we have been asked, when the matter went right up to the Supreme Court said, you can do it in your own facing geographical area, gradually, depending upon how it works. So VVPAT has been introduced. Those of you who know, in the recently concluded election in Delhi, in New Delhi constituency, VVPATs were provided. When it comes to the parliament election, we expect to provide this as an attachment to EVM in larger number of constituencies. So though, over a period of time, so the election commission has been engaged in voter awareness measures. We call them SWEEP, systematic voters education and electoral participation, because we found over a period of time the participation of voters in election process was coming down, not only in India, so universally in different countries. We thought if democracy is to be meaningful, there should be healthy voter participation. As a result, in the last 3 or 4 years, after this initiative by the commission, with a special focus on both enrollment and participation by youth, women, urban. In India, urban apathy is one of the serious maladies. In urban areas, voting percentages will be only 40%, 35%, 45%, like that. As a result of these things, in just concluded Delhi election, this time it was 65%. Like this, we have problems in other places also. This is to continue and also to give a formal recognition to our voter awareness measures. We are observing the Foundation Day of Election Commission as National Voters Day. Usually we invite constitutional dignitaries like President or Vice President of the country. President has agreed to come for this year, 2014, January 25th, in a function where we honor the newly enrolled youth voters. This will be done, this kind of a function will be held not only at national level or at state level, but at every polling station. We have over 800,000 polling stations. On that day, there will be a brief function where we have a functionary called booth level officer who is in charge of electoral activities at that level. He will invite newly enrolled voters, particularly youth, in a small function. They will be given elector photo identity cards on that day. This is one of the things which we have started in the last 3-4 years. Another feature which we have introduced is, in addition to giving every voter elector photo identity card, which is more or less a permanent one, we give them also voter slips just on the eve of the election, 3 or 4 days before the date of the poll, when our booth level officer will go to every household, give them. This will be one, a confirmation to the voter that his name continues to be in the roll. So in addition, it will also give address, description, date of the poll. It serves as a reminder for the voter, for an average voter, about the date of the poll, location, particularly in cities where a number of polling stations will be in a close locality. These are some of the facilitation measures which we do for the voters. I am sure they must be there everywhere, which you will be familiar with. And election expenditure. At some point of time, we had the problem of muscle power, subsequently the money power. India is a country where particularly voters in poorer localities, voters who are illiterate, they can be swayed by offering inducements, either cash or giving them some gifts, etc. So we have started, and again some limits have been fixed for each candidate, how much amount he can spend in an election, to ensure that he doesn't overspend, and also to ensure that he spends only on permitted items. Whatever amount permitted for him, he cannot give gifts to the voters on that. That is given only for campaign purposes. For all these things, we have started the expenditure monitoring wing of Election Commission. This is also a fairly recent innovation of the Commission. Another thing which is almost a malaise is paid news. That is advertisement masquerading as news. When a candidate addresses a rally, even if the audience is only some 200, it can always be projected as if it is a humanity of 20,000. This can come in a newspaper picture, it can come in the electronic media. We identify some of these things as paid news. And right now, law on paid news is not evolved. Paid news is not a penal offense. But we address that from expenditure angle. That which is identified as paid news, we calculate that likely expenditure, include it in the expenditure account of the candidate, one of the consequences for exceeding the expenditure limit is in election petition, his election can be disqualified. And similarly, if he does not render proofful account of his expenditure, even election commission can disqualify a person. From both these angles, this works. Technology, GIS, live webcasting, in some of the remote areas where it is not possible to put our own watch and ward, we install this, we try to look at the proceedings in that place. In one place, in a state called Manipur, where some terrorists entered a polling station and shot at people, they were caught on the web camera, which we could see sitting in our office in Delhi Election Commission office. For whatever further action that can be taken, this will be useful. In the result, the Election Commission of India, not to boast, we have been able to successfully organize 15 general elections to Parliament. The forthcoming one in 2014 will be the 16th election to House of the People in Parliament, and over 350 elections to the state governments. Many of our states, like a state like Uttar Pradesh, has 120 million voters. An average state like Karnataka or Tamil Nadu will be having about 60 million voters, 60, 70 million voters. Virtually, overseeing conduct of election in most of the states in India is almost like overseeing a national election. Like this, we have, the Election Commission has conducted 350 general elections. We are also the ones to conduct presidential and vice presidential elections. So far, 14 such elections have been held. One of the requirements, as I told you, is before the expiry of the current term of the House, elections will have to be held. We have to give due constitution to the governor or the president, as the case may be, so that there will be continuity in the legislature. Never once Election Commission has failed in that task over the last 6 decades. By and large, of course, losers have so many things to blame. Sometimes they blame various factors, including the electronic voting machine. These are all done, routinely. However, general acceptance of verdict by the political parties. Even as the results are coming by the afternoon, the losing party will concede defeat, that the chief minister candidate or sitting chief minister will come on the television and say that he accepts the verdict of the people. That is something which is unique. Even in the worst of times, most bitter conflict and contest, still people have been accepting the verdict. This is just to give you an idea of voter turnout in the recently concluded elections. Those of you who have an idea of states in India, Chhattisgarh, the first state which is known for extremist activities, conducting elections is a real challenge in that state. In that state, 77% was voter turnout, which is record, which is the highest ever in the history of the state. Even in the last election, they could do only 70%. This year, 77%, almost a 10% increase over that 70%. And Madhya Pradesh, 72.66, which is the highest ever for that state from the start of election process in that state. Similarly, Mizoram, so 83.41%, Mizoram is one of the northeastern states in India. For long, it was notorious for some rebel activities and all. So the voting is highest ever. And Rajasthan, those who have an idea, it is a desert state. Parts of it are desert with very inaccessible areas. There also, that 75% is the highest. Again, the feature in this is generally in initial days, participation of women in voting was less compared to men. You can see in this, at least in two states, women participation is more than men's participation. We take special efforts to see that, like doing our educational, promotional programs, asking women to come out and vote. Rajasthan was a state known for women participation lagging compared to men. Delhi, national capital, there also we have achieved highest ever turnout, 66%. And these are some of the our anticipatory, preparatory action for 2014 Lok Sabha election. This is going to be the 16th one. Tenure of present House of the People, comes to an end on 31st May 2014. So the next House has to meet before 1st June. It is our responsibility to conduct the election before that date. There are 543 members in the House of the People. Roughly each parliamentary constituency, Lok Sabha constituency, on an average will have about 1.5 million voters. And these are some of the measures which you have taken. Approaching, the preparation. Here, one of the requisites for holding the poll is having electoral roll ready. In India, we have the practice of revising the roll every year, which is done in the last quarter of the current year for the roll for the next year. Right now, the exercise of rolls revision is going on. Any voter who reaches 18 years as of January 1st of the year is entitled for enrollment. So even the voter who will be reaching 18 years on January 1st of 2014 can apply for registration now during this revision period. Our roll for 2014 will be published in the first week of January 2014. With that, on electoral rolls front, our action will be complete and ready for conduct of parliament election. We take all other measures like drafting employees from employees database, making security arrangements, liaising with the different ministries for getting security forces, etc. All this work is going on. Location, condition of polling stations, resources, poll material required, all this work is going on. And the mobilization of millions of personnel for the conduct of the election, all measures as required would be completed. After rolls revision work is over, we start voter education activity. That would start immediately after January, before the actual conduct of the poll. These are, again, even as it's a very vast country, it is not possible to have poll for the entire country in one day. Last parliament election was held in six phases. So this time also we have to decide in how many phases we will conduct the election. Normally, before the first day of the poll, about 3 weeks before, the notification for the poll will be issued. We make announcement of the election another 3 weeks in advance. Virtually about 6 weeks before actual first day of the poll, would be the announcement of the elections by Election Commission. And from the day we announce the elections, I mentioned to you earlier about model code. Model code of conduct will come into operation. These are, again, to repeat what I have been telling you, conducting election in a fair, impartial manner, rigorous enforcement of model code. These are all some of the things on which Election Commission brooks no compromise. Role, again, repeating whatever I have told you all along. This is the vision of the Commission, which we have been trying to follow as much as we can. So elections that are completely free of crime and abuse of money, based on a perfect electoral roll and with full participation of voters. This is just to give you a taste of last 60 years which we have come in the conduct of the elections. He is the first Chief Election Commissioner of the country, Mr. Sukumar Sen. These are all the subsequent Chief Election Commissioners. I told you, whenever we complete an election, we go with the list of elected candidates certified by Election Commission. When it is a parliament election, it is personally presented to the president. That is the role, that is list of elected candidates given by the commission in 1996 to the then president, Mr. Shankar Dayal Sharma. This one, the second picture, when Madam Pratibha Patil was the president, Mr. Naveen Chawla, Mr. Qureshi, myself, we two were the commissioners. Mr. Naveen Chawla was the chief election commissioner. We presented for 2009 election, we submitted the list to Madam Pratibha Patil. These are some of the earliest known photos and pictures relating to conduct of the election. Just some of the things here in one place, how we know the voting material is carried across a river in Himachal Pradesh state. This is the only way. There is not even a bridge. They have to take it across a ropeway. This is the place where electronic voting machines are traveling on the back of the elephants to reach some of the inaccessible places in Assam. Again, in some places where, like, this is again an extremist affected area called Gachiroli. Is there anybody from Maharashtra here? You are from Maharashtra. So Gachiroli is considered to be Naxalites, extremist affected district. There are some areas where it is not safe for people to go by normal roads, even carrying polling material. These are sent by, helicopter. Some of the earliest available campaign photographs. G.B. Pant was first home minister of the country. After independence, he is addressing an election campaign. Srimati Vijayalakshmi Pandit, she is the sister of Mr. Jawaharlal Nehru. She is, addressing an election meeting in 1950. This is Mr. B.C. Roy. He is one of tall leaders from West Bengal state. He is addressing a meeting. This is Mr. Shyam Prasad Mukherjee. He was the leader of a party called Bharatiya Jansang. The present party, Bharatiya Janata Party, is an offshoot of this party. He was the first president of that party and he is addressing a meeting, so election meeting. This is in Kashmir, where behind snow-clad mountains, so this Bakshi Kulam, Muhammad, he is one of the leaders of Kashmir. He is addressing a public meeting sometime in 1969. Mr. Lal Bahadur Shastri, he was the Prime Minister of India sometime in 1965. He is addressing, and Mrs. Indira Gandhi, perhaps some of you might have seen her also, she is addressing an election rally, Mr. Jayaprakash Narayan. He is one of the leader as well as an activist, a socialist leader, who is a non-political leader. He is addressing meeting 1977. This is the practice of mock election, which is being conducted in 1951, where people have to be told how the election is conducted. This is in a place in Madhya Pradesh where tribals are standing in the queue to go and cast their vote in 1967. Now they are all clothed in those days. This is the voters going on camelback to exercise their franchise in Rajasthan. I told you, of course, this is not now, this is long back. This is Pandit Jawaharlal Nehru, the first Prime Minister of India. He is, you know, casting his vote in 1962. This is Mr. Morarji Desai, who also became Prime Minister later. He is casting his vote. These are some of the regional leaders. Just to give you a flavor of the different parts of the country, that person is called E.V. Ramaswamy. He is a rationalist leader of Tamil Nadu. He is casting his vote. Mr. Rajaji, he is called Rajagopalachari. He was first Governor General of India. After Mr. Mountbatten handed over power, he became first Governor General. He is casting his vote. And Jyoti Basu, he was the Chief Minister of a state, you know, West Bengal, for a record number of years. He is casting his vote. Mr. Jagjivan Ram, in, you know, post-independence era, he is the tallest leader among weaker sections. Mr. Kamaraj, he was also All India Congress Committee President for some time. He is one of the leaders from southern state of Tamil Nadu. Mr. Annadurai, he was the first non-Congress Chief Minister of Tamil Nadu from 1967. He is casting his vote. And M.G. Ramachandran, he is actually the pioneer for all the cinema actors who entered politics and, you know, made it big. He became Chief Minister of Tamil Nadu way back in 1972 or 74, that period. Most of the other leaders, including in U.S., they came, you know, much later. And Srimati Indira Gandhi casting her vote in presidential election. This is Zakir Hussain, a president, and Vasant Dada Patel. So one of the presidents, you know, Mr. Narayanan. Mr. Vajpayee, he is also one of the non-Congress, you know, Prime Ministers of India. He is casting his vote. So indelible ink is, you know, applied on his forefinger. These are all some of the pictures. Like, you know, the physically challenged persons, how they are going and casting their votes. You can see some of these pictures. You can see the person coming out of the polling station and this lady being carried. And some of the reporting of, you know, election from 1947, 1950, 1962, etc., from those newspapers. That's it. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, and we're short on time, so I'm going to try to make this interactive as possible. First of all, I want to acknowledge our friends from the Indian Embassy, Mr. Govind Mohan, who is here, and with his colleagues Ajay from the Ministry of Commerce and Sukriti from the Ministry of Economic. We really appreciate the support of the Embassy. Sir, when Sanjay Satwadi of CII and I were imagining this event today, the headline was the largest democratic undertaking in human history. This is the largest democratic undertaking in human history about to unfold. 800 million people going to the polls in May of 2014 to freely and fairly elect their next leadership of the country, the largest free market democracy on this earth. It is an extraordinary event, and we wanted to bring this to Washington, D.C., and create an awareness, because we believe that here in the United States, that as a democracy, We should be celebrating what's happening in India as we speak, in the 5 assembly polls that just took place, and then this largest democratic undertaking in human history that will take place before the end of May of 2014. So congratulations to India. We celebrate Indian democracy, and we join in solidarity in that democracy. Sir, I have just a few questions, and then I'd like to open it up because we're short on time. But question number one is, if there was one takeaway that I have perceived in the recent 5 assembly polls, Chhattisgarh, Rajasthan, Madhya Pradesh, New Capital Territories, Delhi, Mizoram, of the takeaways, it was the massive voter turnout and the enthusiasm that we saw. I have never in my life seen such an excitement in New Delhi. Every young person was proud to show the indelible ink mark on their finger. The polls were kept open on a special accommodation to allow the large queues of young voters to reach to the polls. So that was one takeaway. And then the other extraordinary takeaway was this rise of this new political party, the Aam Aadmi Party, AAP, AAP. And everybody was talking about, of course, this new excitement in the fact that this party had come out of nowhere, out of the blue, literally, in the last 1 year's time frame. And it is obviously an offshoot of the Anna Hazare movement and a frustration about wanting to get progress rolling along at a fast trajectory. Could you comment both on the voter turnout and this extraordinary enthusiasm of the youth and the rise of this party? Is it recognized? Is it registered? Obviously, it must be registered, but will it be nationally recognized? And do you see that politics as usual is no longer the case in India? In other words, a whole new level of democracy given India's extraordinary youth.
Thank you. Actually, the youth enrollment is actually a much neglected segment for long. We took note of it about 3 years back as commission. And based on census data, we know what should be the percentage of youth in electoral roll. It so happened in that, you know, normative, you know, proportion of youth to be in the roll. When we studied this for the first time, we found only about 20% of them were getting enrolled in the normal course. It is mainly because that is the period when they migrate. That 16 years, 17 years, 18 years, they go to college for pre-university, for university, engineering colleges, or those who had to seek some jobs early in their life to support their family, they move. When they go like that, they really were not able to concentrate on enrollment. So, noticing this, we gave special emphasis and we tried to identify which are all the places, apart from those who continue to be in their place of domicile. This is one. Gradually, from that 20%, it came to 40. Say, for a place like Delhi, you very rightly observed youth enthusiastic participation. Almost 80% of the youth got enrolled in Delhi. In other places, about, you know, 60-70% in that age group. Still, we have not reached the 100%. Even with this, that is the kind of turnout which you saw. Secondly, what we have done during these 5 state elections was, though normally enrollment takes place during October, November, December, in all these states, since the election was held in the last quarter of the year, in November, as you all know, after the usual enrollment as of January 1st, in the course of the year, we organized one more special summary revision. So the usual thing is called a summary revision. This is special summary revision. So in that, we sent our functionaries, booth level officers, door to door, going door to door, so verifying whether a person is already there, whether there are any missing voters, whether woman is enrolled, youth is enrolled, all these things. And in a state like Madhya Pradesh, whose figures I readily remember, millions and millions of such people were enrolled during 1 year. That is, those who were apathetic about enrollment before. Our experience has always been, a voter who enrolls in an election year, he invariably votes. Whatever is the percentage of people who enrolled in the last 1 year, because they are enthusiastic, they enroll. This is one. In Delhi particularly, we found, again, this is a problem in big cities like, you know, megapolis, where people will be shifting from locality to locality because of some tenancy laws. So no house owner allows his tenant to continue for more than 11 months in a place in India. No, because if a person stays for more than 11 months, he may create problem for him later in, you know, vacation. So like this, people will be moving from house to house, locality to locality, constituency to constituency. As I told you, our electoral roll is locality specific. Each place is called electoral part, which will be almost like a ward. Ward in a village, ward in a municipal area. When a person moves from one place to another place, every time you will have to ensure his name is removed in the previous place, his name has to be enrolled in the new place, which people generally don't do. They take interest only during an election year. So we concentrated on that also in the bargain. In Delhi, there was a record number of, you know, enrollment, record number of deletion also. If it had not been done, all these names would have continued in old rolls. They would have got deleted. They would not have been able to vote. These are all some of the reasons why in Delhi. Lastly, what you were telling about special accommodation, in fact, it is not special accommodation. It is the rule that any person who is in the queue at the close of the poll at 5 p.m., if there is a queue of 100 people at 5 p.m., all that 100 must be allowed to vote, though polling officially closes at 5. So what we ensure that other people don't join, presiding officer, that is the person in charge of taking the poll in the polling station, will come out at 5 o'clock, he will go to the far end of the queue. From there, he will give a signed slip to each voter. So after that, nobody can join the queue. To whatever extent he has given the slips, if it takes 7 o'clock, he will be allowed to vote till 7 o'clock. If it is in Delhi, in some localities, it went up to 9 o'clock. But then, if you are in Delhi and watching the television channels, they were actually reporting as if Election Commission has extended time for voting up to 7, up to 8, up to 9. We do not extend time for voting like that when the polling has already started, except under very exceptional circumstances, like supposing there is thunderstorm in some area, poll is disturbed for 3 hours, we extend time like that when we get a report. Ordinarily, we don't, but all these were people who were in the queue. They were allowed, and this is something which happened not only in Delhi, in all places. Because it was happening in Delhi, media was giving a lot of hype about that in Delhi. That is the reality, but everywhere, people are allowed to vote.
Sir, let me just interject on the question about media, because, and this is my last question, because I want to open it up to the audience, but here we are in 2013, and the media is playing such an active role. It's extraordinary. You see Rajdeep Sardesai and others on CNN, IBM, and they're having the exit polling, and they're predicting the outcome even before the queue is emptied. And now we're dealing with another new phenomenon, which is the projection of prime ministerial candidates, where it isn't just the election of the members of the Lok Sabha, and then the formation of the government on the Westminster style of government. It's about projecting the leaders in advance. It's really becoming a really extraordinary mix of technology, of media. How over a phase of seven different phases where the polls are registered in different parts of the country, how do you prevent the media from influencing the outcome in the subsequent phases so you get a complete, honest turnout and the true election of the people?
It is not only a good question, it is an impossible question.
If you might put the
mic on. It is not only a good question, it is an impossible question. In fact, this is the greatest dilemma facing the Election Commission. In fact, during 2004, the Election Commission, then I was not in the commission, they had a meeting with all political parties. They all said during the elections, we should prohibit. Actually, some of the things I am telling, in a very free society like yours or in Europe, you may think it's a very retrograde statement, but still I have to tell you, all political parties said you should ban both opinion polls during this period and also the exit polls. This was the opinion of all the political parties. So Election Commission duly recorded their views, sent, because again, these have to be done by law, by making changes in the law. They were sent to the Law Ministry. When they examined, they had some opinion from the then Attorney General, who said banning opinion poll may affect the fundamental rights of citizens, right to information, right to, you know, free expression, etc. So they did not do that banning of the opinion poll, and they banned only the exit poll. They also said Election Commission will issue the notification for every election regarding banning of exit poll and by what time exit poll results can be published. So that is how, whenever there are this kind of phased elections, now for these five states, it was held in four phases. National election may be held in six, or it may be seven or five. So what we do when it is a phased election, we give a notification half an hour after the completion of the poll in the last phase. Last phase election in this was Delhi. That was over at 5 o'clock. According to the notification, again, we can't give that notification in the evening at 5 o'clock of the day. It has to be, you know, published in the Gazette and all. Naturally, it is done, you know, much earlier. In fact, some of the people were even debating, even in the television debates, asking, when the queues are still there, how is the Election Commission permitting the publication of exit polls? That will it not affect the you know, thinking of these people? You know, first of all, outside the polling station, because this is, you know, extension of time to vote, is only for the people who are at the queue at 5 o'clock. It is, and in fact, in Indian elections, we don't allow the voters to carry even the cell phone to the polling station. There are no television sets outside polling stations. There is no way all these things are going to influence the voter who is in the queue. That's because people do not really know the state of affairs on the ground. But they were also saying Election Commission, they should have, you know, prohibited, they should have delayed, which is all not possible. We cannot anticipate that poll will go on in this place up to 9 o'clock, give a notification, you can come up only after 9:30. These things are just not possible. And regarding opinion poll, yes, actually it's a very good point you raised. In fact, the people, again, just like paid news, the exit poll can masquerade as opinion poll. When you are having different faces, there is no way in which you can stop people from gathering opinion from the voters who come out of the polling station in earlier phases of election. That they can always give as opinion poll. Opinion poll, there is no ban on that, except 48 hours before each conclusion of the poll, when any election matter is, you know, prohibited. So that way, these are all some of the gray areas in law which people take advantage of. Legally, they are on safe grounds, though it may be, you know, questionable. But unless we are very clear, well-set law on these things, it will not be possible to check these things.
Well, to me, it's the most extraordinary thing. We have the largest democratic undertaking in human history about to unfold. 54% of the country of 1.24 billion people are under the age of 25. And, sir, your job is daunting because this is going to be really a time of year upcoming when the entire Earth axis is going to likely tip when that many people go to the polls and exercise their free and fair right to vote. So an exciting time in the history of democracy and something that here in America we should celebrate. Let me open it up. Rick, I know that you're a close follower. I got a hand in the back. Who wants to just throw out a couple of questions in the remaining minutes of the session? Yeah. We have Lalit Jha from Press Trust of India.
Thank you. Thank you for doing this. Since you are in the U.S., one of the largest democracies in the world, can you tell us what are the best practices India can adopt from the U.S. democratic system? Two things that comes to my mind is one is early voting. Whenever people here go to vote, actual date of votes, more than one-fourth of the people have already voted. And second could be reducing the time of campaigning.
Thank you. Reducing?
In India, you ban campaigning 36 hours before the actual polling starts. Here, I think it's much less than that.
You know, ironically, Lalit, I'd have to say that our chits and chads and the lack of uniformity in our voting machines is something that we could learn from India.
Yeah. No, early voting is something which can be thought of. No, early voting. We also tried to explore the possibilities of doing, but then right now, the window for campaigning in any election phase is after the last date for withdrawal and scrutiny from that date. We allow only 14 days. So this 14 days under law is the time that has to be given to a candidate for campaigning. If you increase that 14 days, correspondingly, campaign expenditure will increase. Because whatever, you know, expenditure norms which are given, keeping 14 campaign days in mind. So usually under extraordinary circumstances, we exceed that by a day or so, not beyond that. That way, and if you want to have early voting, by the time of the early voting, campaigning must stop. But otherwise, you can't have the campaigning and also have, you know, early voting. That is not something which is, you know, contemplated in our law. It has to be over. After that, there has to be some period for the voter to think, actually, last 48 hours before the conclusion of the poll is the time which is given for contemplation for the voters. That is, he has heard everyone, he has gone through all the material, he has to think and do his vote. So in early voting, we have got this kind of a problem, both legal and practical. We even, you know, thought of it. I don't know whether we'll be able to find a solution. And we know that it is one of the good practices which is there in different countries, particularly people who cannot be there on the poll day. For them, it is a boon. But we have to think of, you know, some way, or whether if we are convinced, we can seek changes in the law. But we should be, you know, sure of that. This is one. And reducing the 36 hours, that we would like that, you know, reducing that can be there. But then that is the period when we sanitize the area. And reducing that, we don't know whether there would be any problems, etc. That is something which has to be looked at. At least now, people go, we at least ask all campaigners who come from outside that area to leave that place. And reducing that can be advantageous in one way, that now this period is given for the people to go door to door. In the process, they may be establishing some unhealthy contacts also with, you know, voters. That can be checked, but then pros and cons of it will have to be looked at more carefully.
That's it. In the back, yes.
Yeah. Good morning.
I have two short questions. The first is about the diaspora of Indians all over the world. So how do Indians living in other countries participate during the election? So how do they cast their vote? And number two is, to what extent is the foreign media and the observers, election observers, participate in the election? Thank you.
What you are asking is basically about non-resident Indians who live outside the country. For long, there was absolutely no arrangement for them, even for enrollment. Only a couple of years back, enrollment is thrown open for non-resident Indians, and now there is a facility for an Indian who is living abroad. That is, an Indian who has not acquired any foreign citizenship. There is a possibility of their enrollment. But we have still not made arrangement for them about casting their vote from outside the country. Right now, they can only seek enrollment. But if they want to cast their vote, they will have to come to the country at the time of the election and vote. Only those who can program their vacation, etc., come at a time when poll is held, they may be able to cast their vote. So because of this problem, there is no great enthusiasm in non-resident Indians, even in enrollment, as against millions and millions of non-resident Indians living outside the country. People who have got enrolled is only less than 11,000. Reason is this. When there is no possibility of coming to the country to vote, why should they get enrolled? They are not doing. One of the things, or two of the things which can be thought of, one is postal vote. Under law, these people are not eligible for postal vote. Second, even if they are, as I told you, the period from last day of finalizing the candidate, date of the poll is only 14 days. When our people are living in 200 different countries, would it be humanly possible for presiding officer or for the returning officer to send this many ballot papers to the Indians living abroad to reach them, they're exercising their franchise, and sending it back? Our own experience in postal ballot, even for the defense forces who are within the country, number of people who are able to reach back, that is very few. So this will also lead to further frustration. The other option is to think of internet voting. So internet voting, we are very wary of internet voting as of now because of possibility of tampering, possibility of fraud, etc., even on the EVM, which the machine is always in our eyesight. Even there, we keep getting complaints from time to time. How far we will feel confident to allow internet voting? If that is done, perhaps there will be solution for this. And that's it. And regarding the foreign observers, as I told you, we don't believe in international observation. What we have internally, observers going from one state to another, we think it a sufficient safeguard. However, we are not stopping any international people coming and witnessing our elections. Even for the last round of elections, almost people from 12 to 14 countries had visited. They witnessed the election. They had a briefing with us. They had a debriefing. They gave their views, etc., on how the elections were conducted. We do welcome it, but then not as international observation. That's it.
Well, let's wrap it up. I can say that I was just observing the 5-state elections, and I felt very welcome. And again, in an age where there are Arab Springs breaking out across the world, how extraordinary that we live in democracies. where this many young people are coming out to cast their vote. That is something that all of us should celebrate in our democracies. Sanjay, can you wrap it up with vote of thanks?
Yeah, I just want to use two E's and two I's to wrap up this session: educative, enlightening, intriguing, and incredible. And I'd like to thank the Chief Election Commissioner for accepting our invitation to address us all here today. Clearly, election management in India is no easy task. And Mr. Sampath, as India embarks on yet another journey of what may be termed as a celebration of democracy, we wish you all the very best. And finally, I would like to thank our partners, USIBC and Brookings Institution, for their support in organizing this program, the embassy officials, Mr. Mohan, Dr. Ajay Kumar, Sukriti, for all your support as always, and for all of you for attending the session today. Thank you very much.
Jai Hind, Ramanandri.